Interlude 2. Elista. The Yokasha Monastery was ordinarily a very quiet place. Nestled in the forests on the western slopes of the Horneater Peaks, the monastery felt only rain at the passing of a high storm. Furious rain, yes, but none of the terrible violence known in most parts of the world. Elista reminded herself every passing storm how lucky she was. Some Ardents had fought half their lives to be transferred to Yokasha. Away from politics, storms, and other annoyances, at Yokasha you could simply think. Usually. "Are you looking at these numbers? Are your eyes disconnected from your brain? We can't judge yet. 3 instances are not enough. 2 data points to make a coincidence, 3 to make a sequence. The Everstorm travels at a consistent speed, unlike the High Storm. You can't possibly say that. One of your data points, so highly touted, is from the original passing of the storm, which happened as an uncommon event." Elista slammed her book closed and stuffed it into her satchel. She burst from her reading nook and gave a glare to the 2 Ardents arguing in the hall outside, both wearing the caps of master scholars. They were so involved in their shouting match that they didn't even respond to the glare, though it had been one of her best. She bustled from the library, entering a long hallway with sides open to the elements. Peaceful trees, a quiet brook, humid air and mossy vines that popped and stretched as they lay out for the evening. Well, yes, a large swath of trees out there had been flattened by the new storm, but that was no reason for everyone to get upset. The rest of the world could worry. Here, at the central home of the devotory of the mind, she was supposed to be able to just read. She set her things out at a reading desk near an open window. The humidity wasn't good for books, but weak storms went hand in hand with fecundity. You simply had to accept that. Hopefully those new fabrials to draw water from the air would... "Telling you, we're going to have to move," a new voice echoed through the hallway. "Look, the storm is going to ravage those woods. Before long, this slope will be barren, and the storm will be hitting us full force." "The new storm doesn't have that strong a wind factor, Betam. It's not going to blow down the trees. Have you looked at my measurements?"
"I've disputed those measurements."
"But..." Elista rubbed her temples. She wore her head shaved, like the other Ardents. Her parents still joked that she'd joined the Ardentia simply because she hated bothering with her hair. She tried earplugs but could hear the arguing through them, so she packed up her things again. Maybe the low building? She took the long set of steps outside, traveling down the slope along a forested path. Before arriving at the monastery for the first time, she'd had illusions about what it would be like to live among scholars. No bickering, no politicking. She hadn't found that to be true, but generally people left her alone. And so she was lucky to be here. She told herself that again as she entered the lower building. It was basically a zoo. Dozens of people gathering information from span reeds, talking to one another, buzzing with talk of this or that high prince or king. She stopped in the doorway, took it all in for a moment, then turned on her heel and stalked back out. Now what? She started back up the steps, but slowed. It's probably the only route to peace, she thought, looking out into the forest. Trying not to think about the dirt, the Kremlings, and the fact that something might drip on her head, she strode off into the forest. She didn't want to go too far, as who knew what might be out here? She chose a stump without too much moss on it, and settled down among bobbing lifespren, book across her lap. She could still hear Ardents arguing, but they were distant. She opened her book, intent on finally getting something done today. Weema spun away from Brightlord Sterling's forward advances, tucking her safe hand to her breast and lowering her gaze from his comely locks. Such affection as to excite the unsavory mind could surely not satisfy her for an extended period, as though his attentions had at one time been fanciful delights to entertain her leisure hours. They now seemed to manifest his utmost impudence and greatest faults of character. "What?" Elista exclaimed, reading. "No, you silly girl. He's finally pronounced his affection for you. Don't you dare turn away now." How could she accept this wanton justification of her once single-minded desires? Should she not, instead, select the more prudent choice, as advocated by the undeviating will of her uncle? Bright Lord Vadam had an endowment of land upon the High Prince's grace, and would have means to provide far beyond the satisfactions available to a simple officer, no matter how well regarded, or what winds had graced his temperaments, features, and gentle touch. Elista gasped. "Bright Lord Vadam? You little whore! Have you forgotten how he locked away your father?"
"Weema," Bright Lord Stirling intoned, "it seems I have gravely misjudged your attentions. In this I find myself deposited deep within an embarrassment of folly. I shall be away, to the shattered plains, and you shall not again suffer the torment of my presence."
He bowed a true gentleman's bow, possessed of all proper refinement and deference. It was a supplication beyond what even a monarch could rightly demand, and in it Weema ascertained the true nature of Bright Lord Stirling's regard. Simple, yet passionate, respectful indeed. It lent great context to his earlier advance, which now appeared all at once to be a righteous division in otherwise sure armor, a window of vulnerability rather than a model of avarice. As he lifted the door's latch to forever make his exodus from her life, Weema surged with unrivaled shame and longing, twisted together not unlike two threads winding in a loom to construct a grand tapestry of desire. "Wait!" Weema cried. "Dear Stirling, wait upon my words!"
"Storm's right, you'd better wait, Stirling!"
Elista leaned closer to the book, flipping the page. Decorum seemed a vain thing to her now, lost upon the sea that was her need to feel Stirling's touch. She rushed to him, and upon his arm pressed her ensleeved hand, which she then lifted to caress his sturdy jaw. It was so warm out here in the forest, practically sweltering. Elista put her hand to her lips, reading with wide eyes, trembling. "Would that the window through that statuesque armor could still be located, and that a similar wound within herself might be found, to press against his own and offer passage deep within her soul. If only..."
"Elista?" a voice asked.
"Yip," she said, bolting upright, snapping the book closed, and spun toward the sound. Oh, Ardent Irv." The young Siln Ardent was tall, gangly, and obnoxiously loud at times, except apparently when sneaking up on colleagues in the forest.
"What was that you were studying?" he asked.
"Important works," Elista said, then sat on the book. "Nothing to mind yourself with. What is it you want?" He looked down at her satchel.
"You were the last one to check out the transcriptions from Benthel's collected Dawn Chant? The old versions? I just wanted to check on your progress."
"Dawn Chant. Right. They'd been working on that before this storm came and everyone got distracted. Old Navani Kolin in Alethkar had somehow cracked the Dawn Chant. Her story about visions was nonsense. The Kolin family was known for opaque politics. But her key was authentic and had let them slowly work through the old texts." Elista started digging in her satchel. She came up with 3 musty codices and a sheaf of papers, the latter being the work she'd done so far. Annoyingly, Irv settled on the ground beside her stump, taking the papers as she offered them. He laid his satchel across his lap and began reading.
"Incredible," he said a few moments later. "You've made more progress than I have."
"Everyone else is too busy worrying about that storm."
"Well, it is threatening to wipe out civilization."
"An overreaction. Everyone always overreacts to every little gust of wind."
He flipped through her pages.
"What's this section? Why take such care for where each text was found? Fixin concluded that these Dawnchant books had all spread from a central location, and so there's nothing to learn by where they ended up."
"Fixin was a bootlicker, not a scholar," Elista said. "Look, there's easy proof here that the same writing system was once used all across Roshar. I have references in Makabakam, Selatales, Alethala. Not a diaspora of texts, but real evidence they wrote naturally in the Dawnchant."
"You suppose they all spoke the same language?"
"Hardly."
"But Yasna Kolin's relic and monument?"
"Doesn't claim everyone spoke the same language, only that they wrote it. It's foolish to assume that everyone used the same language across hundreds of years and dozens of nations. It makes more sense that there was a codified written language, the language of scholarship, just like you'll find many undertexts written in Alethi now."
"Ah," he said. "And then a desolation hit."
Elista nodded, showing him a later page in her sheaf of notes.
"This in-between weird language is where people started using the Dawnchant script to phonetically transcribe their language. It didn't work so well."
She flipped 2 more pages.
"In this scrap, we have one of the earliest emergences of the proto-Thalo-Voran glyphic radicals, and here is one showing a more intermediate Thalan form. We've always wondered what happened to the Dawn Chant. How could people forget how to read their own language? Well, it seems clear now. By the point this happened, the language had been moribund for millennia. They weren't speaking it and hadn't been for generations."
"Brilliant," Irv said.
He wasn't so bad. For a Siln.
"I've been translating what I can, but got stuck on the Kovad fragment. If what you've been doing here is correct, it might be because Kovad isn't true Dawn Chant, but a phonetic transcription of another ancient language."
He glanced to the side, then cocked his head.
Was he looking at her?
Oh, no. It was just the book, which she was still sitting on.
"An accountability of virtue," he grunted. "Good book."
"You've read it?"
"I have a fondness for Alethi epics," he said absently, flipping through her pages. "She really should have picked Vadam, though. Sterling was a flatterer and a cadger."
"Sterling is a noble and upright officer," she narrowed her eyes. "And you are just trying to get a rise out of me, Ardent Irv."
"Maybe."
He flipped through her pages, studying a diagram she'd made of various Dawnchant grammars.
"I have a copy of the sequel."
"There's a sequel?"
"About her sister."
"The mousy one?"
"She is elevated to courtly attention and has to choose between a strapping naval officer, a Thalan banker, and the king's wit."
"Wait. There are 3 different men this time?"
"Sequels always have to be bigger," he said,
then offered her the stack of pages back.
"I'll lend it to you."
"Oh, you will you? And what is the cost for this magnanimous gesture, Bright Lord Irv?"
"Your help, translating a stubborn section of Dawnchant. A particular patron of mine has a strict deadline upon its delivery."